Tonight, the part three of the series, I wanted to begin by focusing on your story, which, by the way, girls, we're doing an evangelism series talking about the importance of speaking up about your faith. And I wanted to focus on your story tonight because what is very important is that people respond really well to personal experiences. You need to focus on reasons why you believe what you believe. You need to focus on how you became a Christian, what God's done for you. You need to know all that stuff and share it with people because, like I said, people really respond well to that. People actually respond better to you guys than they do preachers in many cases. Does anyone know why? Anyone have a shot at that?
Because we're innocent, we're good, they would never do anything bad.
Yeah, that's really funny.
What?
Yeah, I said that he would wait.
Eric's here.
Look, a Brocket!
Yes, it's only you, Tom.
There is a Brocket sighting.
Hey, that's a good picture.
I don't care. He's a
cool
kid. He has hair.
Anyway, focus. The reason that you guys have a better witness than a lot of preachers do is because a lot of people view preachers as salesmen. Even though preachers themselves are not by any means trying to sell a product, a lot of times people view them that way. And they view you guys as kind of the finished product or, you know, the satisfied customer, okay? So picture this, if you're like getting ready to buy a car or something, the thing is, you know, you might say, okay, this salesman's going to do whatever he can to sell this to me, but my friend bought this car. I want to know what he thinks about it. You see which one's going to have a better witness for you when you're buying a car. It's kind of the same deal, which unfortunately people have those perceptions about preachers sometimes. But the thing is, we have a pretty big responsibility with that to let them know our personal stories and really help them out with that. But like I said, people respond well to personal experience. If you guys remember when we did that Messy Spirituality series, there was a story in the Bible from the guy that got healed by Jesus from being blind. And when his friends asked him, you know, who healed you? Tell us about him. You guys remember what he said?
I went to play football. I had tickets to the Super Bowl.
Not the same lesson. Super Bowl. Anyway, we'll get back to it later. The guy that Jesus healed that was blind, he told his friends, he's like, you know what, I don't know much about him, but one thing I do know is that I was blind and now I see. And that should encourage us, like we went over before, because, you know, we may not know a lot about the Bible or have a lot of great evangelism techniques, but that was a heartfelt response by that guy. He says, you know what, I was blind and now I see, and it's kind of the same deal with us. Those are things we can use. Say, I was in darkness, now I'm in light, and that good stuff. Let's see. You guys remember who was here for J-Mac and the lock-in?
I got her here.
Most of you.
Is that the guy?
The rapper.
Jesus.
That was yesterday. Was that from that night?
No. We gotta post that picture on the website. I'll send it.
Anyway, I'm bringing him up because he had a really powerful testimony. And in his testimony, he talked about things. Come on in, sir. Come on in.
I'm late. Sorry.
Right. Talking about J-Mac.
J-Mac.
Get you some.
Anyway, in his testimony, if you guys remember, it was real powerful. He talked about how he used to be involved in a lot of addictions like drugs, alcohol, sexual relationships, all those things. He said that in his life he was trying to focus on, you know, worldly things that would make him happy. Okay? And that was a little bit of his testimony. Now, also you guys probably remember some of my own testimony. A little bit different in that I didn't get into a whole lot of bad things in high school. But at the same time, I was still trying to fill or satisfy my needs with other earthly things, like trying to be the best athlete or trying to have, you know, most girls date me or try to be popular, have a lot of stuff, you know. Those kind of things also got in the way. And for J-Mac and for myself, and hopefully for many of you, as you get older, hopefully God speaks to you and you start to realize that, you know, only He can satisfy. But The reason I tell you these stories is because these things relate to people. These are our own personal experiences, and they relate to people a lot better than what, you know, being a Bible thumper or something and saying you're going to hell, because obviously it's not what we're supposed to say. But
or even if you don't get that bad, people don't appreciate a one-size-fits-all approach.
Yep.
Yeah.
You just feel like, oh, you look at me as a customer or some crap.
Yeah, you're selling me.
You're just trying to sell me some new thing.
Yep.
Anything else?
Next thing I want to talk about, back when I was driving back and forth from school, which was a couple hours, sometimes I would listen to sermon podcasts from Irwin McManus. He was that guy, the Soul Cravings thing that we did, the 3 week long. And he had a sermon 1 week that was entitled Leave a Mark. And the main purpose of, well, I guess the whole sermon was based around one point that said, you only leave a mark on someone if things are different when you're gone. So you only leave a mark on someone if things are different when you're gone. Now, I know that most of you go to really big schools. To think that you can turn the entire school upside down, you know, for Jesus is probably a little unrealistic to think you can do that by yourself. But here's what I want you to think about, especially tonight. I want you to think about your circle of friends. I want you to think about the people that sit around you at lunch. I want you to think about the people you're in class with. When the time comes and you're no longer around these people, or when the time comes and you graduate, will you have left a mark on their life? Will there have been any impact because of you on their lives? Because once high school's over, you're probably not going to have that same opportunity with those people ever again. So think about that. How can you leave a mark in their lives? Bible says we're supposed to be leaving the fingerprints of God everywhere we go. So I encourage you to do that. Couple more things. The first week, if you remember, we talked, and this is just a little review, we talked about Moses and how he was afraid to do what God wanted. He said, I can't speak for God. I stutter. I'm too shy. And remember, God said, who makes mouths? I make mouths. You know, don't tell me you can't speak for me. Well, tonight I also wanted to throw in Jeremiah, which Madison Kiriath should know this very well, because we went to Believe this past weekend and they talked about Jeremiah. And there's a verse in there where Jeremiah is kind of doing the same thing as Moses. He's kind of making up a reason of, you know, pick someone else, don't pick me. And Jeremiah's reason wasn't too young. Jeremiah was, they say, 12 or 13 years old at the time. So even younger than most of you in here. And again, it's kind of the same response. God said, don't tell me you can't speak for me just because you're too young, because I'm calling you right now to do my work. And this work of evangelism that we're talking about and that we're called to do is something that never ends, and it starts now, you know. So hopefully, you know, I don't want you guys to think I'm too young. I don't want you to think I'm going to wait till after high school or after college to do this, you know, because it starts now. You have a chance to do it now. Last thing before we talk about the Bible verse, this is actually something that I saw today, so I just put this in today because it just happened. I went to Donato's for lunch in Brownsburg, and I went in the left room. You guys know which place I'm talking about in Brownsburg. Went in the left room with the TV. Okay. Now, unfortunately, this TV had like three channels. Didn't have ESPN. I was hoping to watch some highlights or something.
It was just an antenna?
Three channels is all it was. So I'm sitting and eating Donato's, and I'm watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire for like the last 5 minutes. But then when that show is over, a little show called Maury comes on.
Oh, yeah.
COVID. Is that the good show?
Maury. Yeah. You are not the father. No, that wasn't the one I was watching today. But so this show comes on, and since I didn't have any other choice, I had to watch it. And I want to describe what was happening in the show. Today's show, there were a couple kids like that running outside. There's a couple, they were both 14-year-old girls, okay?
They were a couple?
No. A couple different 14-year-old girls, separate families, separate lives. And each one of them, I mean, to put it nicely, was just a complete delinquent. I mean, they were terrible girls. They've done some awful things. They're terribly rude to their families. Their families have lost control of them. They don't know what to do with them. So that's kind of what the show is about. But
here's, you said they were at Donato eating there. Like, how'd you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I talked with them. Led him to Christ at Donato's today. Yeah, it's pretty good.
They shaped the show 2 weeks ago, and then they show up to that.
Yeah.
That was weird.
But here's what happened. One at a time, these girls were brought out, and just imagine, what do you think the crowd did when they came out?
Yeah. I've seen that one.
So just picture this, though. A 14-year-old girl who, yeah, she's had a messed up past and everything, but she walks out to a crowd full of screaming, booing people who are flipping her off. She's flipping them off. I mean, there's people doing this, like, come on, you want to fight? Like, to a 14-year-old girl. Ridiculous. So you can imagine the girl was, you know, cussing at him back and saying, let's go, you know. So just crazy environment, which I guess for some people is entertainment on TV. But here's what I wanted to talk about. Unfortunately, our society is a lot like the Pharisees were in that we point the finger at people. We say, you did all that, boo, you know, and you're pointing the finger at her. And what I wanted to talk about is what would happen if, same scenario, if instead of that crowd going absolutely nuts and pointing the finger at her and yelling at her, you know, what would happen if they were silent? What would happen if they started encouraging her and praying for her? You know, what would happen? Do you think her attitude would have changed a little bit?
Maybe.
Or how about this? Maybe there's a Christian in the audience who's not taking part in what's going on after the show goes up to her and says, hey, that's not right, and I want to pray for you.
You know, that Christian started beating all those people up.
I don't know about that.
Don't do that.
But anyway, we talked about leaving a mark. Not that kind of mark that we want to leave. But think about the impact that could do, you know?
Exactly.
Point of this really is for me to tell you that it's really hard for people to know who Jesus is when everyone around them is judging them, pointing their finger at them. Even people that claim to be Christians are pointing their finger and yelling at you for everything you've done wrong. If that audience or people in the audience would have acted differently, that girl, let's just say, you know, one of those girls, would have instantly seen the kind of love that Jesus gives, because it's unconditional. It's forgiving. It's graceful, you know. And that would definitely make a huge impact. So hopefully that stuff like that wakes us up a little bit, despite our differences with people. We can show them who Jesus really is by how we treat them. That leads us to the verse of the day. It's kind of fitting. Move this again. 1 Corinthians 9:22. This is Paul speaking. He says, I have become all things to all men, so that by all means I might save some. And I wanted to ask all of you what you think that means. I have become all things to all men, so that by all means I might save some.
I have become something that everyone can compare themselves to, so that by me being who I am, that some people look at me and say, whoa, that'd be kind of cool.
I kind of think it means that you take on all the good qualities that people can admire and take comfort in, maybe, and then that makes you a special.
Kind of like his wordage at the end. He's talking about how hard he works, you know, to evangelize, and then he says, so I might save some. I mean, he knows that not everyone's going to follow this, but if I just save some, then, you know, I'm doing what I'm called to do. Anybody else? I think it also means things like, you know, if this person needs prayer, you pray for them. If this person needs a shoulder to cry on, like Edwin McCain's song, I'll be your crying shoulder, then let them have that, you know?
Tears.
And how about this once again? Find common ground amongst you and other people. They're coming soon.
Like that last week when you were like challenging Dave, and like, no, then you're going to
heaven. Danny Schaffner's had some pretty good statuses.
Oh, yeah.
Why is he updating his status like every
2 seconds? Hey, sorry, Danny, if you're listening to this, because you're my Twitter friend and you probably are listening to this. These guys are actually joking with you right now. They actually love your statuses. And they don't understand the whole Twitter thing yet, so don't worry about it. I got your back.
I hate you.
All right, real quickly, we got one thing to do tonight. For you girls, what I do now is I flip into a non-believer, and I'm going to raise questions as a non-believer to see how you would respond to them. Shut up over there. All right, so we're just doing one. So everyone is involved in this one, okay? How would you respond to this? As a non-believing person, I'm now flipping. All right, here's the deal for tonight. When I was a kid, my aunt was dying, and I prayed to God. I said, I will believe in you if you heal my aunt. When my aunt died, I have not believed in God ever since. So how would you respond?
Everybody has to die sometime. It doesn't matter if you believe God.
Everybody dies sometime. Thank you for
destroying my hopes and dreams.
My aunt was young, first of all, and second of all, that shows there's no God because I prayed. I said, if you heal her, I'll believe in you, and she wasn't healed. What?
He does what's best.
I don't think that's best for my family. We're all pretty upset. We still are.
God knows.
God knows.
So
God is real, but he won't answer prayer.
It's hard.
He answers all prayer.
He did answer your prayer.
He
said no. Boy, what a loving God that is to say no to a dying aunt.
Was it a prayer or was it a deal?
It was a prayer.
It sounds like a deal to me.
Either way, if I pray and it doesn't get answered, why would I want to believe in that?
Well, you try praying to somebody else, that always works too.
What?
See how good that goes for you.
Dear Ben, what can I do for you?
Maybe get on Facebook.
What?
Get on Facebook and request to be friends with Danny Schaffner and read his daily status.
Ridiculous.
Boo.
What do you want those shirts, Danny?
The bear and the hunter analogy. Does that make it's jumping in my head?
It's all you, because I'm not familiar with it.
Okay, I can't remember it. I'm asking you for help.
This is
okay.
There is no lifeline here today. The bear and the hunter.
Anyone else have any response?
How's your aunt
die? Oh,
she had a Kermit Tullio osteosis.
So it's natural.
Is that funny? My grandmother died.
Beast.
She was only in her 40s.
Ouch. That's
yes?
Go time.
Speaking from experience of losing a loved one when they were young, and I am young, my father passed away when I was 13. He was 48. Yes, that'd be right. He was 48, died extremely unexpectedly, and we too had been, he had surgery and died of a blood clot from his legs to his heart. And while he was in the hospital, we too had prayed to God for his healing hand to restore my dad's health. And obviously that wasn't the best thing for my father or my family at the time, because if he would have been healed physically here on this earth, he would have endured physical therapy for the rest of his life, 3 times a week. He would have lost total control of his bowels and bladder and would have had to manually make him go to the restroom. And, you know, God, you know, apparently realized that that's not the best situation for him, and why allow someone to go through pain like that and suffering when heaven is so much better than anything we can imagine here on earth. So he called him home. Yes, we were extremely upset. I was 13. I didn't have a dad. Didn't have somebody to rejoice with when I got my license. When my baseball team went on to win a championship that summer, he wasn't there for my graduation. He won't be there when I get married. He wasn't there for that for any of my brothers. But at the same time, it was, you know, what was best for him, what was best for our family, because he wasn't always the greatest person in the world. And since then, our family has gotten closer. We've our bonds have gotten stronger. There's no more bickering, fighting, yelling. You know, we still have our little rants and raves at each other, but you know, my dad was the center of a lot of the hardship in our family, and we don't have to deal with that anymore. And like I said, he's in a much better place than we can ever imagine here on Earth. So, yes, it's upsetting that you know when you lose a loved one, but if you know they know Jesus personally, I view it as a time of rejoicing for them. Because they're in heaven, getting to hang out with God all the time. And to me, that'd be pretty sweet.
Okay. Hey, friend. Let's see what happens.
Is that speechless?
I will never be speechless.
Cheese bag. He just made it up, yeah.
That'd be so
he talked for 10 minutes and he just made it up.
Made it
the entire thing up.
That's what I'm talking about.
Anyone else? Is that a hand, sir?
Was there another response to that?
Another response?
You can't stop that.
What do you mean?
From
your character. Oh. Well, I could say things like, you know, I wanted my aunt to be completely healed, as in she wouldn't even be sick if she was, if she didn't die from it. And I think that, because I hear people, you know, say that, you know, they prayed and their dad or, you know, husband or whatever was healed from it. And so I just don't know why my aunt wasn't. Does it mean she's bad? Does it mean I was bad? Does it mean I didn't pray enough?
I have another thing. Because you said something about, somebody mentioned something about no, you know, God didn't get you for it, he said no. I think a lot of times we don't realize that no is an answer. I mean, you ask your parents for something, they say no, that's an answer. You don't always get what you ask for in life and from God, because if God gave us everything that we ever asked for, if you ever saw the movie Bruce Almighty, but...
everyone wins a lottery.
Yeah, and then there's no growing of character. There's no you know maturing as a person, both physically and spiritually and mentally. If you just got whatever you wanted, so I think we need to accept the answer no because it is an answer. We might not want it, but it is an answer.
That's actually a good point, Todd, because I can actually speak to this from being a parent. Like when we, like believing in God, we there's certain things that we, by faith, understand. Like one is his omniscience, you know, that he's an all-knowing, that he sees circumstances with a great much more detail than we ever could comprehend, right? And as a parent, like I have kids who obviously come to me with wants and desires. If it was up to my daughter, she would eat candy for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like, you know.
Heck yeah.
But at me as the parent, you know, I know better than to say, yes, I will give it to you because you want it. This is what, you know. So, and like Todd said, just an extra little thing here, we look to God as a heavenly father. Well, as me being an earthly father, my kids, there are some times when I have to say no. It's not good for you to get everything that you want, you know. So, it kind of adds some.
My whole thing, being a non-believer again, is that if God knew that one of his quote-unquote children were only going to believe in him, you know, for this one time, that's all it took. It was her to be healthy, and I would have believed that there's a powerful God. I would think that if there was a God, he would do it for the sole purpose of another one of his kids believing in him.
It's about faith. It's not about proof. It's about believing. It's about faith.
Well, I had faith that she would be healed, and she wasn't.
Heather had faith to kill all the Jews. Apparently, that didn't work either.
Okay.
Should have said yes to the That was awesome.
Wow.
That was some jokes.
I would maybe say something like, it was more important for God to perform His will in that situation for you to believe in Him under those circumstances. Not to say that God wouldn't prove Himself and help you to believe by answering your prayer, but that there was a greater purpose behind it. There's a book in the Bible called Job, and it's actually the oldest book in the Bible, and the central point of it is that Job is real good, he's real prosperous, has a wife and all these kids, and just all kinds of wealth, cattle and pigs, and then Satan comes along and says, hey, what about your servant Job? You know, he only believes in you because you give him all these great things. And God says, well, okay, we want a contest. We're going to do it. And then you can do this, this, and this, and hurt him. You know, this way you can, you know, kill his children off, you know, mess up all the stuff. And I guarantee you he won't deny me to you, you know. And it won't, you know, forsake me, he'll still believe me. So Satan says, okay, and does all these things, and God's right, and Job doesn't curse God, and he sits down and just tries to deal with it, and it's hard. And then again, Satan comes back, and he does this, you know, again, and it's even worse, and then the whole rest of the book, Job is suffering and praying God, asking for answers, and trying to understand what's going on. But God never gives him an answer, and he never tells him anything about how Satan came and, you know, wanted to get this contest going. So then at the end, God shows up and basically tells Job to be humble, that he should have trusted him. And Job says, you're right, I'm nothing, and you're God, and you know better. And then God restores him all these things, more than what he had. But he also never tells him about the original contest. So the whole point of Job is that, like, there can be someone who's even believes in God already, and horrible things can happen, but, and we may not ever find out why, but God knows why, because 9 times out of 10, probably 100 times out of 100, it's because Satan is trying to mess up the human race.
Good stuff. So each one of these guys, the things they've been saying, have kind of been proven what we've been talking about, because we've talked about, especially last week, having a good, you know, biblical understanding, spending time with God. That way you can say things like, let me tell you about Job. Todd and Dan both use personal experiences that we talked about tonight. And it's good stuff. Good job, everyone. I wrote down like 4 notes myself about how to respond to that particular question. And you guys actually said a couple of them, because I talked about the lottery. You know, if you pray to God, you know, if I win the lottery, I'll believe in you, because a lot of people do that, and they do make deals like that. Not exactly the best thing in the world to base God on. One thing, though, I really wanted to touch on is another biblical thing. You think about the temptation of Jesus himself. You say, you know, Jesus was tempted with all these different things, even up on a mountaintop, and, you know, Satan saying, I can give you all of this. And instead of Jesus always saying, I'm just going to prove my existence to you and everyone else, instead he would say words like, thou shalt not tempt the Lord your God. And there's another time he's tempted and he says, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. So instead of like falling into those temptations, or from a godly standpoint, instead of saying, okay, I'm going to prove him, you know, that he should believe in me because I'm going to save his aunt from dying. You know, there's biblical, you know, references to that. And definitely also, definitely hit on the fact that prayer is powerful. And I did also note that, you know, sometimes the answer is no. But try not to shy away how powerful prayer really is, and how you've seen people change by it, and to never stop praying. You could even get into, you know, personal stories of, like, you guys, I'm sure, know the Jeremy Camp story. Some of you maybe. His wife died of cancer, and at times he felt like saying, "I quit. I'm not gonna, you know, live for him anymore." And then in that moment, Jeremy said that he felt God saying, "I need you to stand up and worship me right now. I need you to, you know, point your arms to the sky and worship me." And now he tells that story to millions and millions of people, and it makes a huge impact. I've seen so many good things happen through bad experiences, even death in families. So try to personalize it like that. Those are the notes that I had. Questions, comments? This concludes our broadcast. Thank you.
Bye,
Danny. Love you.